All right, nice to have you back with us. Tomorrow morning, we're on at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. Yes, 7 a.m. So we'll do our Original Joe's contest tomorrow. Guess the score, and you can win a dinner for two at Original Joe's Westlake, North Beach, or the takeout at Little Original Joe's in West Portal. We've had so many happy people. Our winners are all set up for their dinners. All right, Bruce Jenkins, how are you today? What's new?
Hey, doing good. How are you, Marty?
Very good, and a couple of things. One, you wrote an interesting article yesterday about the Giants and the Dodgers, and it's something that's been underneath these stories the whole year. The Dodgers, with all the names, and they add names, Danny Duffy, every day they pick up Cole Hamels.
Yeah.
And the Giants just quietly go about their business. Let's talk about that article.
Yeah, they still have the 4-game lead, and they're at 69 wins now or whatever it is. But the point of it was, you know, talent is as much as talent matters, and of course it always does. That there's a lot to be said for chemistry and the mood around a team, and some of the underlying stories that you can't really measure by the numbers. The Giants, there's such a contrast in the trades. The Giants trade for Chris Bryant was just a stroke of perfection because he fits in so perfectly in every way you can possibly name, including the locker room chemistry. I mean, as soon as he plays third and he plays center, he'll play short, he can play anywhere, he loves playing everywhere, he just loves the whole deal. And the Dodgers, along with getting Max Scherzer, which was a heck of a pickup, they get Trey Turner, but where do you put him? I mean, they've already got a great shortstop in Corey Seager. They're pretty much set everywhere, and he's got to play somewhere because he's a tremendous – he homers, he steals bases, but – you know, you just can't really take away too much time away from Turner or Chris Taylor. And just the, you know, beyond that with the Dodgers, they could easily solve that. But the Trevor Bauer thing hangs over them like a dark cloud, and they just don't want him to come back, and I don't think he will. But, you know, they still get asked about it. What's the latest? And you know, their bullpen is such a shambles. They're 1-12, Marty, in the – In extra inning games now, that's not to be taken lightly. They drop another one last night. The bullpen is a shambles, and the fans are doing a lot of booing. You know, it's just not fun at all. Meanwhile, Bill Plaschke said they'd be the greatest team in the history of baseball by the end of the season, but they might finish second. You know, I mean, and you know, maybe none of this matters. I tried to make that point, too. I mean, teams have overcome an awful lot of things, you know, worse than this, and won the whole thing. And fans didn't know about everything that was going on. But, you know, there was a lot of discord, and they just got through it because they got character. And these guys might have it, too. I just haven't seen any signs, kind of personified by Bellinger's slump. You know, what the heck's going on with him? That the Dodgers are really that good when you actually play them.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I'm glad you wrote the article. It's because it's something we've been talking about all year, and that is the struggles at key positions in the starting pitching. I mean, that Price last night, they tried to squeeze an extra batter out of him, and he gave up a home run to tie the game 2-2. They're still waiting for Danny Duffy, and Kershaw says September. Cole Hamels, who knows what. So they're groping right now. And the bullpen is a major problem with Kenley Jansen and Trinan, and they're overworking these guys. So I think it was a great article. The Giants just quietly put the players together. And I said this to Susan when she was on earlier. Bruce, you look at the lineup that the Giants are throwing out there now. I mean, 1-8. And as she said, you could turn it upside down and start 8-1 and still have a very good team. And it's going to get better. So I think the Giants lineup is something to talk about right now.
Well, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, it was just so gratifying to see Belt come in, and right away he gets a pitch in his wheelhouse, kind of low and in, a cutter from Burns, who was completely dealing, and hits it out. You know, this is a big deal. I mean, he can't show up and go 1-12, you know. Mm-hmm. They're thinking, well, let's get Lamont Wade back in there. And, you know, meanwhile, Wade will be a little bit on the sidelines, but he's going to be cool with that. It just keeps going. You know, you think after a while it's not an accident the way these guys keep stepping up when they have to. There's always somebody willing to step in there. You know, you're thankful that Yaz didn't get hurt making that incredible catch, but if he had, they would have figured out a way to get through it.
You know, it's funny you brought that up. First of all, having Ruff and Flores, Solano, and potentially Wade on the bench, I mean, it's a tremendous platoon advantage late in the game, and Kapler's starting to use it. He's getting comfortable. It's like he's got a new car, and he's starting to get comfortable taking it out on the freeway. With all the moves, so I'll say that about him. But
he's going to go to Germany and take it out in the Autobahn, see if he can hang with those Porsches going 200 miles an hour.
No, he makes the move now without any hesitation, and we know what's coming. You know, we know the move is coming, and they're winning with it. But Yastrzemski's catch was something else. First of all, Telez, as I jokingly said, he looks like someone I pitched softball against. I mean, you know, he's from Elk Grove, and he just crushes the ball. And hits a bomb to center field, and Yastrzemski went back and climbs the wall, crashes into it, and it made me think of Pete Reiser.
And I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, 1941. This was the next Mickey Mantle, and for the decade of the 40s, every other year, he crashed into not a padded wall, a cement wall. And he had concussion and fractured skulls after fractured skulls, and it cost him his career. And Yastrzemski made that kind of catch last night.
Yeah, you really don't want to go to Pete Reiser extremes, but for the guys on the team to see that, to see the way he goes after it, he threw up an arm just at the very last second to keep that shoulder from taking the full brunt of the collision, and he handled that so beautifully. But for teammates to see a guy like that putting his body on the line to make a catch, that's, you know, it's not life or death. I mean, it's not September 30th and you're a game out. It's just day to day. It's just the way that he plays the game, and that really can rub off on guys.
No, it was something. Really, it was something to see that last night, and that's a tough play. And Willie Mays always told me he didn't crash into walls. He figured out a way to make the catch without doing that. And this is a very very dangerous play, and Yastrzemski made it last night. What's your take on the Brewers? What do you think of the Brewers? We know the trio of the starting pitching, and they have some interesting bullpen, like the Giants. But what about the team itself? What do you think?
Oh, they're very good. I really like the Brewers a lot. I mean, just top to bottom, really. The pickup of Willy Adames was extremely good. Yelich is going to be a big factor down the stretch. Burns, the rotation is great. And then at the finish, though, for them to bring in Devin Williams with that changeup that he struck out Bryant on three of them. Bryant couldn't see any of them, really. And then we didn't even see Josh Hader, who was unbelievable. They're just really good. I mean, it's no accident that they've got a big lead in a pretty tough division. And they're just to me a really solid, well-managed team.
Well, you know, baseball is a game of the baseball gods. You know, the Giants make the greatest comeback in the franchise history just about on Thursday, down 4-0 with two out in the ninth, and they still make it happen 5-4. Then last night, the Padres are up on Arizona 5-0, and Arizona comes back with an 8 spot and wins the game. How about that?
Yeah, the Padres are reeling a little bit on a number of fronts. The Tatis thing is really bad. He's talking about maybe coming back, but that shoulder has been so vulnerable. You just really can't imagine the way that he plays, the way that he attacks the game, that he's not going to be able to be himself, I wouldn't think, you know, with that shoulder in over the next 2 months, but we'll see.
They're pitching also. The Padres pitching is...
pitching's in trouble a little bit, too. They suddenly don't look very formidable at all. You know, one thing I also wanted to mention about the Brewers, with Lorenzo Cain comes back, it's like, my goodness, that guy's is a tremendous player.
Isn't he? The bat speed may not be there, but, boy, to have the guy in the outfield, and he directs traffic, I like that. Because he's got guys in the outfield, you know, he's got to help out a little bit. He's got and Garcia is baby Miggy. Baby Miggy Miguel, and it's one-handed, and the guy, that may be the most unlikely home run I've seen all year.
Yeah, that's the worst example of a juice ball. That ball cannot leave the yard. I mean, with all due credit to his strength and the way that he managed to make contact, you look at the still photo of the contact, his body positioning is just comical. He's reaching out just to do something with it. That can't leave the yard. Cannot happen.
No. And Webb pitched great. And Dave Fleming said it on the wrap last night. And if there's a playoff rotation, he must be in it. There's no question.
Oh, yeah. He came out and was just absolutely dealing. You know, he gave up that home run, but that I think he had nine strikeouts when he comes out after six. I mean, once again, as we've said, he's got a knack for that weird homer notwithstanding, coming right out of the gate with really good stuff and just establishing himself, which is so crucial for a young guy like that. You know, you don't want to wait around. Well, maybe he starts getting it together around the fourth. You can't really wait around for that. He's ready. He's really a delight to watch with that stuff.
Yeah, he's gotten over the trouble. If he gets in trouble, he became unglued. But he's kind of gotten over that. And thanks to Posey. I mean, but let's face it, Posey's a big part of that. And this Bryant made some defensive plays last night, and so did LaStella last night. The Giant defense was tremendous last night.
Yeah, people are going, you know, following the Giants from afar. It's like, hey, wait a minute, they've got Tommy LaStella, too. He's a heck of a player, and he's already been a very positive influence on the team, you know, hitting and fielding. Once again, you know, the depth is great. And as you mentioned, the way that they can, you know, maneuver things around in the late innings with whatever you're platooning or pinch hitting, bringing guys off the bench, they've got some guys who can do it, and they're all pretty well accustomed to it, too. It's mm-hmm. not like a guy who hasn't pinch hit in a month and is not really that into it. They all seem to sort of cherish their time in the game. This is a team where if you're on the roster, you got a pretty good chance of playing somehow that night.
Yeah, he'll use him. He used four pinch hitters last night, and he still had three left. But I think probably Estrada will go down at some point because they've got Solano to back up at shortstop now. But interesting, as you look at what's going on, I was looking at Bumgarner. I wanted to mention him. How about the game he pitched this week?
Yeah, boy, he looked awfully familiar. He really did. Yeah.
Didn't it look like him? It's nice to see it in a way, really.
He's got so much action off of that same arm slot, just the fastball, the slider, the cutter, a little bit mixing up speeds, you know, high and away, low and in. And when he's spotting the ball, he's so tough, and he's just so mentally tough. And he just seems to know you know, what pitch to throw to who at the right time. He's getting used to it's a pretty bleak situation there. I mean, you know, to take out Kelly after the gym he was pitching was one of the real preposterous moves of the season. Everything they do is wrong, and Bumgarner's right in the middle of that. They're 34 and a half games out, let's put it that way. That's not easy to do.
No, it's not. You're talking St. Louis Browns, Pittsburgh Pirates, 1952 at this point.
Really bleak.
Merrill Kelly, 102 pitches. It's the Jordan Zimmerman thing all over again. And, you know, it's okay. So you say a four-run lead, we should be able to hold it. But they brought in a guy right off the disabled list who you knew things were going to happen. And you knew you were going to be
right
in trouble.
Yeah.
So
right away they start stinging the ball.
Yeah, big win. That was a huge win for the Giants, knowing what they've got in front of them this weekend. This will be a good game tonight with Sanchez and Woodruff. We'll see what happens. All right, the bullpen. I was thinking about this week, and someone actually came up with it. You know, Leon to Rogers to McGee and Garcia and Alvarado and all this. Are we back to the nasty boys? You know, remember when the Reds kind of – Tony La Russa kind of perfected this with Gene Nelson and Honeycutt and Eckersley. But here we go with
Charlton and Dibble,
and you know, it's kind of a nice comparison.
Yeah, although those guys could easily take them out with their shirts off and their hair literally on fire. I mean, those guys were really nasty. They were radical, really radical personalities, just wild men, really, and which only helped in their whole persona that they brought to the mound. They were all really different as pitchers, and they're all really good. I don't know if these guys are nasty, but as a group, you can make the comparison. As we look at it right now, you know, bullpens are so hard to sustain. They can turn sour in an instant. You're wondering what the hell are we going to do? But right now, the succession they have is very, very good, and they hold this through for another couple months, and you're golden.
Yeah, it's 110 games. I mean, you know, this is, as you say, you know, you play good ball for another month, And all of a sudden, you know, you could open the gap, and then it's the race to the finish, which is next. But, yeah, they were nasty. Rob Dibble, taking his shirt off and then having a fight there. Randy Myers, didn't he bring, like, explosives to the park or something?
If he could blow up something, it was a pretty good day for him. Yeah.
Remember that? You know, Randy Myers. It's something crazy going on. I remember that. So these guys, the three of them. And, look, Bruce Bochy perfected this with the Padres for so many years. And that's the way you win. You need those three guys to take that game in the sixth, turn it into a six-inning game. And that's the key.
That's the Dodgers key. Are looking for one guy.
Yeah, it's not Kenley Jansen, I'll tell you that.
No, it really isn't.
And that's going to be, well, we'll see where that's going to end up, because they did not go out, really, and get another reliever. They concentrate on the starters. In a game today where the bullpen has to be part of it, they did not go out and fortify that part of it. Interesting. It was an interesting trade deadline. Hey, we lost J.R. Richard this week. Bruce, I remember at Candlestick, him pitching in the wind, and J.R. Richard of the Houston Astros died, and he had a stroke back in 1980 around that time. But what a pitcher.
Yeah. Yeah, I had the pleasure of watching him in his prime at Candlestick. I was just starting to get a few writing days for the Chronicle, but mostly just as a fan, late 70s. And he was, you had to really see him to believe, you had to see him up close to believe how fearsome he really was. And Dusty Bakers and Joe Morgan both said he's the toughest guy they ever faced.
Really?
And, yeah. And it's funny because Dusty, one of the great Dusty stories was the year that the Dodgers had four guys that hit 30-plus homers, he was the last guy who didn't have one. He had 29. On the last day of the season, the Dodgers are facing J.R.
Really?
And Dusty, who had never done anything against J.R. Richard, managed to hit one out, become the fourth guy in that club, and it's a heck of a moment. And that's when the high five was born, because when Dusty got to back to the dugout, he did it with Glenn Burke. They didn't know what they were doing, but it turned into the first high five, and we still see that today. But J.R. Richard was just ridiculous. I was at the All-Star game in 1980 in the twilight, and you talk about unfair. He was hard enough to hit normally, but the American League guys are going, who the hell is this? First of all, I can't see the ball. Secondly, it's like Dusty said, it looks like he's like 50 feet 6 inches from the plate.
Yeah.
And it's just a terrible shame that he had the stroke. He was destitute. He was homeless for a while. I heard he was living under a bridge at some point in Houston.
Right.
But he got his life back together. I think he got into the ministry and sort of quietly lived the latter years of his life. It was a big loss and huge memories for anyone who saw him pitch.
Yeah, one of the greatest ever. And then with Nolan Ryan, if he would have been healthy with Nolan Ryan for a couple more years.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And Ken Forsch was on that team, and Vern Rule. And people, you know, they had some
serious Larry Dierker.
Serious pitching. Hey, I got to watch a little bit of the Cub game yesterday, and I bring it up for this reason. It was a day game. It was Wrigley Field. It was the White Sox coming in. It was Kimbrel trying to close it with a 4-1 lead in the ninth inning. And he gives up a home run to Romine, who hadn't hit a home run in 4 years, a 3-run shot to tie it up, but it went in the basket. And the place went nuts. It was a day game at Wrigley, and I felt like it was 1935. It was just a beautiful moment, I thought. That basket is what a touch. What a touch for the park.
Yeah, you're looking for Gabby Hartnett over here. I mean, it's just
one of those
Rick Stevenson's going to show up. I totally agree with you. One of the great things I really enjoyed about covering the A's, we're going back to the 80s now, but being able to go to Tiger Stadium and Fenway and the old Yankee Stadium and, you know, living the memories that place carried and knowing that so much had happened there at Fenway Park. Leading it from the visitors' clubhouse out to the field, it wasn't really a walkway. It was just a bunch of old planks that moved around when you walked on them. And you're thinking, you know, I'm Mickey Mantle here walking out to play the Red Sox. Things hadn't changed that much. And Wrigley, of course, when you covered the Giants, I got there quite a bit too. And you just walk in there and you just feel great. There's something about the baseball tradition, and when things don't change, whatever it might be, that's something I've always really cherished, and you get less and less of it these days, but you still do get you get an experience like the ball landing in the basket, just clearing the ivy. You know, that's just classic.
Great. And the place was packed on a Friday afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you wondered why these people weren't at work, according to Lee Ilya. Right? Remember the rant?
God, yeah.
Remember his rant? You know?
Oh, boy, that was wicked.
Why aren't they at
meanwhile,
work?
And the Cubs, they just cleared out everybody. You know, they're several games below .500. They're hopelessly out of it, and everybody's gone. And yet, it's day baseball at Wrigley. Forget about it, and nothing else matters.
No, it was Ferris Bueller's day off. It was one of those magical moments. I thought it was a good moment,
very much so, yeah.
Hey, going back a couple of things on August 7th, and I remember this so well, 1971. Now, this is August 7th, 1971. Vita, our dear Vita Blue, wins his 20th game, Bruce, on August the 7th. How about that?
Yeah, boy, that was such a big story. You know, the A's were just coming into prominence. They hadn't won any titles yet, not till 72. But in 71, he comes in, as you say, 20 wins at this stage of the season. I mean, he had a 17-strikeout game. He was just dominating people. He's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He's a distinctive character with a great name, although Charlie Finley tried to have him called True Blue, which was really ridiculous. Hey, have another drink and forget about that one, Charlie. But and that led to a lot of strain between the two of them. You know, of course it did. But Vita. I always thought that the two greatest arms ever bestowed on human beings were Nolan Ryan and Vita Blue. Vita was a tremendous high school quarterback, and he really preferred football. But at that time, there weren't any black quarterbacks in college ball. It was a whole ridiculous stigma that they couldn't make it somehow, which, of course, was disproved in millions of ways. But he chose baseball because his father had just died, and he could make a little bit more money, which wasn't a whole lot, but he sort of reluctantly gave up football to play baseball, and of course it turned out to be a fantastic decision. But in 71 he started the All-Star game, which is, you know, a hell of an honor for anybody, and that was the game at Tiger Stadium where there were an awful lot of home runs. He gave up homers to Aaron and Bench, and you know Reggie Jackson hit that classic home run behind Vita, but he got the win, and he was the story that year. He was the biggest story in sports, really, for several months. And he tailed off at the end. He never pitched that many innings, but still goes 24-8. Mm-hmm. And you know, he wins the Cy Young and the MVP. Okay,
how about that? We forget how good he was on August the 7th. Wow, you know, today August 7th, if a guy has 11 wins, you say, my goodness, you know, 11 wins. You know, what a season.
Hey, complete game number one. Way to go, buddy.
If he plays until December, maybe he'll win 18. It could happen. 1999, and Wade Boggs. And, Bruce, where do you put Wade Boggs in the hierarchy of hitters for you? His 3,000th hit, obviously, in 1999.
Well, he's way, way, way up there. It's funny, his name, you know, I don't know how revered he is now among people who look back, but this is a guy who, I mean, it was much more than 4 years, but from 85 through 88, his average went somewhere between 357 and 368. Those four seasons he was, I mean, come on now. He had 240 hits 1 year. He was just a machine of a hitter who, interestingly, was not such a great hitter until he read Ted Williams' book, The Science of Hitting, which has become the Bible for so many players. But it's interesting that a great hitter like Boggs benefited so much from that. And I can remember the Red Sox had Carney Lansford at third, a great player, won the batting title in 81, but he hurt himself in 82. And Boggs stepped in and hit just like a terror down the stretch, and they wound up trading Lansford to the A's,
right,
which worked out for everybody. But Boggs was an absolute machine of a hitter. You just couldn't stop the guy. He hit to all fields. He hit almost 400 at Fenway 1 year. You know, just peppering that wall, and a real hitting genius who should be well remembered.
Yeah. Well, the other one is Ichiro, 2016, 3,000th hit for him on the same date, August the 7th. How about that?
Yeah, I really think what Ichiro did, it certainly didn't diminish Boggs' achievements, but it was so distinctive and fresh and endearing that he did a lot of the things that Boggs was doing. I mean, Ichiro shows up at, he's 27 when he shows up. He's got like 1,200 hits already in Japan. He comes in right away with 240 hits, 350 average, Rookie of the Year, and the MVP. And from that day on, the nation was just riveted to the spectacle of this guy. He was over 200 hits for his first 10 seasons here.
Wow.
I mean, 200 hits, that's very hard to do. 10 years in a row is insane. And then he got the record 262, the year that he hit 372. He rarely missed a game. He won Gold Gloves. And he had, I don't know if it was a swagger, but he had a lot of style. There was a real personality to his game. You could tell that he loved it and loved to show off a little bit, and had like Boggs, who took superstitions to the extreme. Like he ate chicken every day for 700,000 days in a row. Ichiro was a little bit quirky too. He had a very specific routine that he did before the game. Really, his entire day was, in some ways, a routine. But man, the payoff was just insane. And one other thing I remember about Ichiro when he first showed up, he's in batting practice and for the Seattle Mariners, and his whole thing when he first showed up was he would take it really slow, and his whole batting practice was about spraying the ball to left field just to get a feel for the outside strike zone. So he's hitting dribblers and he's fouling the balls in the stands, and Lou Piniella's going, this is the guy from Japan that we got? This is what he does? And just wait around a little bit longer. In another BP, you might see him hit like 16 balls into the stands just for kicks.
Yeah, love that story.
Yeah,
Rick Riz tells that story. Piniella says, can't the guy pull the ball?
Yeah.
And then, of course, in the exhibition game, it's two home runs to right field and crosses the plate and says, how's that?
Yeah.
And, great. Yeah, great. Well, Hall of Famer. He'll be a Hall of Famer.
Oh, man. Oh, God, yeah. So good.
He brought a lot to the game. All right. Well, we'll chat early tomorrow. I know it's 8 a.m. for you tomorrow. But this is a
good series.
Good series, Woodruff and Sanchez. And these are two solid teams that the game comes down to the bullpen. They've both got good bullpen. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Okay, we'll look forward to that, Marty.
Thanks, Bruce. Thank you.
You bet.
All right, that is Bruce Jacobs of the Chronicle. Next up is our philosopher is back. Tony Watson is back, and we got to sit down and chat a little bit. 36 years old. He's never pitched better. He's got more velocity we'll talk about, but also the way players get traded and what happens in the family and everything else. So a little bit of the philosophy of baseball from the left-hander who has made 665 appearances in the big leagues. Tony Watson next right here on the Sports Leader.